played this song for my mom. The Average White Band, Cut the Cake. And I asked her afterwards what she thought of it. She said, I like it because they say, cut the cake, please.
Nice.
This is the Showbiz Show on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Max Foisy here with me. And we got some movies to get to. Actually, kind of a slow weekend, movie-wise. There are only a couple of movies opening this weekend here in St. Louis, both of them indie movies. One of them is called I Do Until I Don't, which we're not reviewing today because it was not screened, which usually says it's not good. And I have read a couple of other people who review these things for a living. And as much as they like Lake Bell, the actress and writer and director of this movie, who I praised considerably several years ago when she came out with the definitive movie about people in the voiceover world. It's called In a World, which came from the Don LaFontaine famous three-word slogan. I love that movie.
I love that movie.
But this movie seems like it's going absolutely nowhere.
I was not a big fan of Lake Bell, the actress, and so I went in with really low expectations for In a World. But, I mean, she wrote it, she directed it, and she's phenomenal in it.
Yes.
It's just a really great movie. If you have any interest in voiceover work or even broadcasting in general, it's so smart and so well done.
Yeah.
And
it has real voiceover guys in
it. Yes.
I interviewed one of the people in that movie. His name's Fred Melamed, and he's got one of these kind of voices. Mm-hmm. And it's just very knowledgeable about the business.
I hadn't
smart.
Thought about how, as a rule, women don't do movie trailers.
Yep.
I mean, there's been some out there, but it's very true, and I think that's such a strange thing. Like, why wouldn't you?
Lake Bell was also in a movie with Owen Wilson a few years ago called No Escape, mm-hmm. which included the single most harrowing scene a parent could possibly see on screen. I won't ruin it for you here, but if you've not seen that movie, I liked that one too. I thought it was pretty good.
I did too, and when I saw the trailer for that, I thought, this is going to be so horrible. What's
yes.
Owen Wilson doing?
Yeah.
And it did get a little goofy with the Pierce Brosnan storyline, but overall, what a tense movie.
Yes.
It completely sucked me in,
yeah.
and I bought it and believed in it, and I know the scene you're talking about. I don't think I breathed for that whole scene.
No. In fact, there are sometimes in the movie where you have to say to yourself, breathe now, because you may not get another chance.
It's a very tense movie.
So that one's called No Escape. The other one we were talking about was Inner World, but the one that's opening this weekend is I Do Until I Don't, and I hear you shouldn't.
Yeah.
So let's leave that alone. The other one I didn't see, but Max did. It's called Patty Cakes. Spoiler alert, it's a dollar sign instead of an S.
So what does that tell you?
That tells you somebody was really, really clever and funny. Not.
You know, way back in, 2005, 2006, a long time ago, when a young, relatively unknown, up-and-coming musical artist named Lady Gaga was playing on a side stage at Lollapalooza, there was somebody else who was coming up called Kesha, who nobody had ever heard of, and her S was a dollar sign.
Yes.
And I remember everybody saying, who is Kesha? And of course now, both her and Gaga are huge.
Does Kesha still use the dollar sign, or has she gone back to the lowercase S?
She might have gone back to the lowercase, but at first, it was dollar sign.
Mm-hmm.
So Patty Cakes
could be worse. It could be brackets.
Oh.
You know?
Or right.
Some other punctuation mark.
Exactly. We're like, that always bugged me about Motley Crue. It's like, what are you doing with the
umlaut?
Yes.
Yeah.
Come on now. You don't need that.
I agree.
All right. So Patty Cakes is the latest in a long line of underdog stories. It reminded me in certain elements of Rocky. It has a lot of Rocky. It's got some callbacks to Hustle and Flow.
Did you say something about Rocky?
I did.
Rocky
I
Balboa. Did. That's me.
Do you have a umlaut or any kind of dollar sign in your name, Rocky?
I do.
Stallone? It's Stallone with a dollar sign?
Yes, it is, because I made loads of money with Rocky.
He also spells Stallone with two ones instead of L's. Just leave him alone.
Yeah, the Rocky 1V, I got that, and then...
Yes, as I was saying, Hustle and Flow, which put Terrence Howard on the map, and 8 Mile, which, of course, everybody, even if you don't like Eminem, everybody really liked 8 Mile. It also reminded me a bit of Purple Rain, where, you know, you've got Prince playing this young kid who's in a band. He's like, nobody likes my music. But then he does a song like Let's Go Crazy, and you in the audience go, you're a genius. Mm-hmm. This is an incredible song. What was interesting about Patty Cakes, now I'll get to the character and what she wants to accomplish here, but what's interesting is it reminded me a bit more of something like a Rocky, where he's an underdog and you don't know if he's going to win that fight. With her, she's pursuing music and you don't really know if she's very good at it. And that's an interesting thing for a movie like this to do. Once again, when you watch 8 Mile and Marshall Mathers is like, I just don't want to eat my mom's spaghetti anymore. But then he raps, he freestyles, and he's amazing at it. And it's easy to root for him. With Patty Cakes, there's a woman named Danielle McDonald who is Australian, although you wouldn't know it from this movie. She is a young woman who still lives with her mother in New Jersey. And I've never been to Bergen County, New Jersey, but this movie doesn't make me want to go there. I imagine if I'm from the tourism board, this is probably going to be one of the worst things for New Jersey since you're Jersey Shore. It's really run down. It's a go-nowhere town. Nobody is going to ever leave. You see a bunch of bar scenes where the old people obviously been there their whole lives. They're drinking their worries away. This is where Patty works, and she goes by the stage name of Patty Cakes. At least she would if she ever got on a stage. She basically makes beats with one of her friends who works at a pharmacy, and she tries to freestyle over them, and she writes really R-rated, almost X-rated raps. This movie is rated R, and so if you don't like foul language, you're not going to like the movie. I saw this, as we do with most low-budget films, at Plaza Frontenac. Now, this fits in with the Plaza Frontenac films because it's a low-budget independent movie. However, I was not only the youngest person in this audience, but I was one of the few who didn't walk out. I think a lot of the older people, once they realized it was a movie about rap music and about trying to make it in hip-hop, they left.
Did they think it was going to be about a children's song? Patty Cake, Baker's Man?
Lyrics that I can't repeat here is more of what this Patty Cakes does.
Okay.
Now, way back in the day, had my grandmother tried to go see a movie that featured really loud rock and roll, like Rolling Stones, she wouldn't have liked that either. And so I understand that there's a generational divide, but I think you can get behind this character, Patty. Her last name in the movie is Dombrowski, and all of her friends, or at least the people who know her, call her Dumbo because she's overweight. This is something else to know about Patty. She is a lower class, overweight white girl who tries to make it in hip hop. So she has a lot of things on the surface against her. She's white, she's female, and she has zero money. But she really wants to make it. Now, again, I could get behind her as a character. Whereas, you know, the hip-hop and the rap music didn't turn me off, but I think it did for a lot of the people in the audience who just, they can't get over that style of music. Now, the strangest thing, and really the reason why I would recommend Patty Cakes, which was written and directed by Jeremy Jasper, I believe that this is Jeremy's first movie, and I would be surprised in the next 10 years if we don't hear his name a lot. I think that the blocking is great, the characters are well defined, and they're not just, I compared it to Hustle and Flow and 8 Mile and Purple Rain, but these are really different characters who are doing their own thing. The most striking thing about this, though, I can't tell if Patty Cakes is very good at what she's doing. I thought a lot of the beats were uninspired. I think a lot of her flow, as the kids say, it was not very good, and the lyrics were sort of amateurish. And so when she plays people her music and people are going, oh, that's not very good, I'm going, yeah, it's not very good. And yet I'm still rooting for her. And this is why I invoke Rocky, because without spoiling anything here, I think Patty Cakes is almost a movie about how not everybody gets to achieve those dreams. And that doesn't mean you don't work for it. It doesn't mean you don't try. But not everybody gets a recording contract and gets on the radio and becomes a giant star. So I think that's an interesting movie that's a little more challenging for audiences than the people who want to go see an 8 Mile or a Purple Rain, where you know the people are genius. And it's easy to get behind Eminem or Prince because they're Eminem and Prince. With Patty Cakes, who is, by the way, not a real rapper. This is an actress playing this part. So I give her kudos. She's not trying to have a rap career. But I do think it's going to challenge audiences a bit more because it's uncomfortable when the movie's over and you realize that maybe not everybody makes it.
It sounds like the kind of movie I'm unlikely to see, mostly because I'm not a rap music guy. I never saw Straight Outta Compton. I never saw 8 Mile.
Sure, you should see that
never
too.
I didn't see Hustle and Flow, but that's because they stole my song, It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp.
That was your song.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that was your ringtone for a long time.
So I didn't go see any of those, and I'm unlikely to see these. But, again, it's probably a generational thing.
These movies have something in common, like 8 Mile and Straight Outta Compton. These are great underdog stories. And I think even if you dislike hip-hop music, that you would enjoy those movies. I'm a little shocked you haven't seen 8 Mile. It's a really phenomenal film.
What do you give this score? What score do you give this on a scale of 0 to 10?
I will give Patty Cakes a 7, just a couple of notches above average, because I think it's a little more challenging than a movie like this is normally. And also, Kathy Moriarty, of all people, plays her Nana in this film, and she gets all the laugh lines, and she's very, very funny.
She's had an odd career since Raging Bull, hasn't she?
Absolutely, and I was shocked to see her in this very low-budget movie. I wasn't expecting her to be as funny as she was, and she adds a little bit of class to the overall movie. So yeah, I was a little surprised that I enjoyed this movie. I'm not going to go out and buy the soundtrack, but I would recommend Patty Cakes.
Based on the movies that Kathy Moriarty has done, the only decent one I can remember after Raging Bull was, she was in Neighbors with Belushi and Aykroyd, which wasn't a very good movie, but it was a big part for her.
Which was the very next year.
Oh, yeah, I did not like that movie at all.
No, they had the roles backwards, where Belushi was the straight guy and Aykroyd was the crazy guy.
And.
But ever since then, if I were her agent, I think I'd be surprised every time somebody said, "Is Kathy available? Is Kathy available? Of course she's available! Have you seen her IMDb page? It's not that full!" all right, so let's talk about another movie that is playing in theaters now. It is not opening this weekend. It actually opened 40 years ago this weekend. It's a movie by Steven Spielberg, a little independent movie called Close Encounters of the Third Kind. They are re-releasing it. Do you know what theaters it's playing in?
Yes, here locally it's playing at the West Olive 16, that's an AMC. It's also playing at the Werenberg O'Fallon 15 and Werenberg Ronnie's 20, as well as the Moolah Theater and Lounge. And it's playing,
for the next week.
That's right, yes.
They're releasing it, so if you want to see it on the big screen.
A whole week, that's
amazing. Yeah, which was the way to see this movie. This is one of those movies that if you didn't see it until it came to television, I don't care how big your TV is at home, you did not enjoy it on the grand scale. You really had to, particularly the last half hour of the movie, when the aliens come to Earth and land there outside of Devil's Tower, Wyoming. 40 years, buddy. it was a very well-done movie that I really enjoyed because Spielberg did such a good job with the human angle of this, particularly in the persons of Richard Dreyfuss and Melinda Dillon, who are the two people who are affected by an encounter they have with an alien craft, and something gets implanted in their brain that makes them want to go to Devil's Tower, Wyoming. They don't live anywhere near there, but they want to go, and they're not the only ones. There are lots of other people who have had these encounters and want to go there as well. And it's wonderful. I love the fact that Spielberg used one of his heroes, François Truffaut, the great French director, as kind of the lead scientist in this movie. And I also like the fact that the scientists are allowed to be scientists in this movie, and they're kind of the good guys in it.
But they're not action heroes, which is nice.
Correct. There's also a wonderful small part by Bob Balaban as a translator, one of the first roles in his career that was absolutely terrific. I do, however, to this day, still have a question about the finale in which the aliens come back to Earth and return a bunch of humans who they have picked up at various points, including the little boy who's Melinda Dillon's son, and they are returning them to Earth after giving them a trip, and I don't know what they were doing in space.
Disney World, you know.
Well, yeah. You know, the conspiracy theorists always use the phrase anal probe. I don't know what was going on up there, and I don't want to, but then they come back to Earth, and there's a group of human astronauts who have been trained for a mission to go off with these aliens, and Richard Dreyfuss is there, and he's so fascinated that François Truffaut gets the other scientists to agree, hey, this guy seems so fascinated by this, let's send him off, just a regular guy with no training. And Richard Dreyfuss agrees and goes off with the aliens, not knowing what's there, despite the fact that he's leaving behind his wife, Terry Garr, and two or maybe three kids.
Spielberg has said that this was the only script that Spielberg wrote that he directed. He's co-written projects since then, but normally he uses screenwriters, and this was a young man who wrote this movie because he was fascinated by aliens, but he said that this was obviously a movie written by a person who was not married and had no kids. And he is since has said that he would never have written that movie now that he has a family.
Yeah.
He would never end the movie like that, and it's difficult for him to watch the film now because he realizes that Spielberg doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because Spielberg now, he would never leave his wife and kids.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to watch a movie obviously written by a young single person, because that's who would write a movie like this.
Well, it's interesting for me to have that perspective, because 40 years ago, I was a young single person, and I didn't think about that. Yeah. Now, I have a kid, and I absolutely wonder, how could you just get on that thing and go away?
Well, and I think it works as far as the amazing pull and the amazing call the Dreyfuss character felt.
Yes.
And it can even work in sort of a tragic sense. But I think at the time, Spielberg was like, of course you go. And then after a while, he realized, I would never do this.
Yeah, what's interesting is the Melinda Dillon character, who has been driven by the same force to go there, when her son comes off that, all she wanted to do was get her son back. She wanted to be the mommy, the parent of this little boy. She would never have entertained the idea of, I'm going to leave him behind and go off into space. She just wanted to have that family connection put back together again. It's a powerful movie, and the special effects for 1977 were remarkable. I mean, people in the audience were ooing and aahing at what we were seeing on screen.
I imagine what will be screened over the next week will be the special edition, which was released in, I think, the late 80s, early 90s, which it was not a Star Wars special edition in a sense where there were new scenes or added things. It was basically all the special effects were cleaned up. So the matte paintings and the...
There was an extra scene at the end. You got to see Dreyfuss go inside the alien spacecraft. And you see about 4 or 5 minutes of him wondering at the beauty of the lights and everything that's inside.
And why was that cut out the first time?
Because it's not that special. There was no need for the Close Encounters of the Third Kind special edition.
I'll bet that is what they're going to show.
I bet it is. Yeah. But it's not that special. So it is playing at 4 theaters in the St. Louis area and all across the country as well. We'll take a break and we'll come back with more showbiz in just a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. Continuing along with the showbiz stuff here on the Big 550 KTRS. Brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company, online at windowworldst.louis.com. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, and Max Foisier here with me. Tim Weiland is off today, and we're talking about showbiz. We've already reviewed a new movie called Patty Cakes, which Max gave a 7 out of 10. We talked about the 40th anniversary re-release of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is playing at a few theaters here in the St. Louis area. But now that we're up to Labor Day weekend, this is the end of what they call the big movie season. Hollywood makes 40% of its revenue for the entire year between Memorial Day and Labor Day. In other words, when the kids are out of school. And this year, they had a horrible, horrible summer. The guy who's the CEO of AMC Theater says this quarter was simply a bust. They're down 16% from the same period last year. Last year, they were down 10% from the year before that. My question for you, Max, is why?
I think that it has very little to do with the movies that they're releasing and more about viewing habits. I think that, I mean, you pointed out in the last break, no matter how big your television is, you haven't seen Close Encounters unless you've seen it on the big screen. But that is a thought process that is going by the wayside. Everybody is very content with their giant screen TVs and their paltry sound bars. And I think very few people relish the movie going experience. Either because of the texting teenager next to them that takes them out of that experience, or because there are some of the chains around town that have smaller screens and bleed over from the movies next to them.
Oh, in some of these multiplexes, you go see a quiet movie and there's a superhero movie next door and it bleeds right through.
That happened at the Glass Castle when I saw the screening of that. I could hear Spider-Man or whatever it was. You know, I felt like I watched two movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the solution would be for smaller boutique screens. I don't want to see a 35 multiplex, you know, screen. I'd rather have one or two very nice screens with more of a maybe even a, you know, 21 and up show or 18 and up show. I think that's what they're going to have to do. Now, the movies that will do very big this year, you look at the biggest movie of the year, Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. You know, that was an icon who had never had a big screen movie, so people wanted to see Wonder Woman. Grandmas went to go see that movie. It was a big deal for a whole lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, this year, The Last Jedi comes out. That's a Star Wars movie. People will be there on opening night because it's a big cultural event.
And there were other hits. Spider-Man Homecoming was a hit. Girls Trip was a hit.
A major hit.
First over $100 million movie with an all-black cast and all-black people behind the cameras as well.
Yep.
Dunkirk was a hit. Baby Driver was a hit. But then on the other side of the ledger, you got The Mummy, Baywatch, The Dark Tower, King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, and the sequels in the Alien, Transformers, and Pirates of the Caribbean franchises. They all tanked at the box office, didn't they?
Well, and the majority of those movies that you mentioned were just bad movies. I mean, Dark Tower was just a horrible movie, especially for fans of that book series. And then you had, you know, the umpteenth Transformer film. Nobody wants to go see those films. The last couples haven't made a big dent. And then it's the same thing with the Pirates movie. I think people are tired of these giant franchise movies, except for, you know, the Marvel Universe. People are invested in that. I mean, so far that has not run out of gas. But everybody else trying to have a connected universe. You know, The Mummy failed because they told us before the movie was released, this is part of a 16-film franchise. Come see it. People felt burnt out before they even saw the movie.
And same thing, it's like the rule about you never have your first event called the first annual.
Exactly.
See if it works the first time, and then have the second annual.
And same thing with Dark Tower. They said this is a television series and a movie series. Well, no, it's not, because it lost money, so nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
What's funny about the past 2 weeks, Paul, is we've had very small films like Patty Cakes, and films that just, you know, they're not going to do very much business, and that's fine. They're smaller pictures. But after Labor Day, the big movie next week, I think, is going to be a sleeper film that's going to do very well over the next 2 months, and that's It, which is based on the Stephen King novel. Mm-hmm. It's never been adapted for the big screen. People call it a remake because they remember Tim Curry on television. Well, it was a TV movie. It wasn't exactly as vicious as this movie is going to be. I have high hopes for it, even on the heels of Dark Tower. I think it could do very well.
Yeah. So what about the idea of companies which are teaming up with the cable companies to try to convince the film studios to let them have the movies first in what you would have to call a digital rental program on the same, what they call the day and date programs.
Sure.
So instead of going to a movie theater, you could pay $30, $40, $50 and watch a movie at home the day it gets released into the theaters, and you're thinking, well, $30, $40, $50 for a movie ticket. You know what? You take the whole movie, you take the whole family to a movie, and it's going to cost you more than that once you get all the stuff together. So this is an idea that Hollywood has been toying with for a while. Do you think that's going
to
happen?
I'm surprised it hasn't already happened. All you have to do is look at the McGregor-Mayweather fight to realize that people will pay a whole lot of money if they know that they can get their friends and family together. And Star Wars and other event movies like that are a great example. If they did a day and date with Wonder Woman, you would have had giant house parties of everybody pitching in $5 to watch, you know, a $60 rental of Wonder Woman on a big screen. I think Star Wars would do very well as well. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. Steven Soderbergh, who loves doing new innovative things, even though I'm not a big fan of him as a filmmaker, he always tries something new. I believe he was the first filmmaker to try day and date with a very small budget movie called Bubble, and he released it digitally and in the theater on the same day.
And nobody cared about either platform.
Because it was Bubble.
Yes.
You know, you have to do something like with a Harry Potter film or a Marvel film to really get people invested.
Right.
And interested. Now, all of that being said, and I do think this is going to happen because pay-per-view has been very popular for a very long time, WrestleMania and things like that, I wouldn't do it. I like the movie theater experience. Mm-hmm. I don't want to watch Star Wars at my house. I mean, I own all of those movies. I don't like putting them in. I would rather go see the re-release of Close Encounters than watching it on my TV because I like the overall experience. I think if retailers did a better job ensuring that you had a good experience at the theater, meaning nobody kicking your seat, nobody on their phone, nobody talking, I don't know, employ some ushers. We were at the screening of Hitman's Bodyguard, and somebody was on their iPad during that screening.
Yes.
That should not be allowed to happen. I think if you make the experience a better one, people will not be so loath to leave their house.
Well, you know what? You're not going to convince Marcus, which owns the Werenberg Theaters, or AMC, or Regal. Those are the three biggest movie companies in America, movie theater companies in America. You're not going to get them to employ more people when their numbers are dropping. shopping and they're losing money in many of these cases. And the whole day and date concept has got to scare the crap out of them.
And you're right. It was just announced, I think today or yesterday, that their stocks are falling because of this really bad summer. And they're all panicking. I think the first thing that's going to happen is you're going to see a lot of these 20 screen multiplexes go down to like five. Because again, what we've seen rise in all of these, you know, Regal and AMC are the dinner theater experience where you sit down at a plush table, that you have somebody bringing you your dinner and you have drinks that are, it's more of a boutique experience. That's what they're going to have to do, because kids, I don't think kids go out and watch movies anymore.
And
I
how
really
expensive
don't.
Is that? It, are those boutique type of movies, where movie theaters, where you're going in and you're buying
a
ticket?
I don't think it's much more expensive than a nice dinner out, and you get a film with it. So I'm okay with that.
But if they can make the food kind of match what a restaurant would charge instead of what a ballpark would charge, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A sports venue.
Yeah.
I think that would be more appealing.
And
people.
I think the movie theaters are, on the whole, a lot cheaper than someplace like Scottrade or Busch Stadium.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if you want a drink or if you want food, it's still cheaper than that. I don't know, as cheap as it is at home. Well,
yeah.
True. But again, you know, yes, I can sit in my pajamas at my house and eat Reese's Pieces and watch something on my TV. That, to me, is a completely different experience than watching a film, and especially for a first run film. If I've never seen it, I'm not even talking about a big special effects extravaganza, even something like Patty Cakes, I would rather see it on the big screen. And I know that I'm going to sound like the old man yelling at the sky, because I think that theaters are going to go away, and I think the only people who are going to keep them alive are going to be the crazy people like me who have a one room movie house that they still
support. What the problem is going to be, if it's the big movies that are going to go day and date, so you can watch them at home on the day it's released, like you were talking about, and are going to be effectively pay-per-view for that sort of stuff. It's going to be the really big movies. Those are also the movies that prop up movie theaters so that they can also show you the smaller independent movies. Because if there's a movie out there with a $5 million budget that's going to pull in $12 million, The Big Sick would probably never play in anybody's house. It would only play in movie theaters where it created great word of mouth.
Yes.
And everybody who I've ever sent to see that movie has come back and told me they love that movie, but would that have ever made it at home?
Well, no, because again, you don't have that same word of mouth. If Amazon, which bought that film at a film festival, if Amazon just said, okay, coming out next Tuesday is Big Sick, it's streaming, it gets lost in the shuffle, and you don't have that same kind of word of mouth. I don't know. Or maybe
to the contrary, it's Amazon and Netflix that will save movies like that, because they are the ones who are starting to underwrite, and have been for the last couple of years. They are underwriting a lot of these movies. Manchester by the Sea, for which Casey Affleck won an Academy Award for Best Actor, that was an Amazon Studios movie.
True.
So if they're going to be there and provide that sort of stuff to the home, I'll be honest with you. A lot of times when I want to see a movie, I find movies online that never got to a theater in St. Louis. They may have played in New York and Los Angeles, but they never played at an independent theater here, including the Tivoli and Plaza Frontenac. So maybe that could be the savior for those kind of movies.
Remember when back in the glory days of the 1980s, where if you were a teenager, you went to the mall. That's what you did. The malls are all closing down now.
Yeah.
The malls are all being sold off. They're all being transformed into different kinds of... Pretty soon, you're not going to have a giant mall. The same thing will happen with movie theaters. It'll be a thing like drive-ins. Like, drive-ins were ubiquitous. They were everywhere. And then people's viewing habits changed. Their relationships with their cars changed. And so the giant multiplexes that we know and love, they're going to have to go away, because these theaters are going to go out of business. They're hemorrhaging money. And so they're going to have to change their business model. What it will be, I don't know. But I think if you enjoy going to the movies like I do, soak it up. Enjoy it now, because I do think things will change.
All right. I want to talk about two things that you can watch at home that are returning to TV for new seasons. One is Black Mirror, which I recommended a few years ago when I first saw it as a British import. It's a series that kind of has a Twilight Zone vibe. Each episode of the series is a standalone story. Black Mirror makes them all kind of with a tech theme, a high-tech theme to them, but they're all fascinating stories about people and the world that is maybe 20, 25 years from now. Not a dystopian future, but a technology-ridden future. And they're all fascinating. They did a couple of seasons in England. And by seasons, I mean 3 episodes each. So there was a 3-episode season, and then a year went by. And then 3 more episodes, and a year went by. And then they did a Christmas episode in England with starring John Hamm, and that was 90 minutes as opposed to the others, which are roughly an hour long. And they were all absolutely wonderful, and they had a lot of people watching that on Netflix, because Netflix bought the rights to this English series. And then apparently Netflix saw a lot of people like me who were watching and loving this series and binge-watching it in a weekend, because you could, it was only 7 episodes. Then Netflix went to the guy who created it, named Charlie Brooker, and said, create some of those for us. We'll give you global distribution through the Netflix system. And so he did. And so he did 6 new episodes last year, including one that starred Bryce Dallas Howard, Ron Howard's daughter, who's been in a bunch of movies, and a few other faces you might recognize. And that effective 3rd season of Netflix must have gotten enough attention from enough people who were downloading it and streaming it. Netflix announced this week they've committed to a 4th season of it, which will be around probably sometime, if not late this year, then early next year or maybe in the summer. And they're starting to get the attention of Hollywood actors and directors who want to be a part of this. Charlie Brooker still oversees it, but people like Jodie Foster and Jesse Plemons and Rosemarie DeWitt, these are the kind of people who are going to be in there, as opposed to the relatively unknown actors who have been there in the past. And if you haven't watched Black Mirror, I strongly recommend you go back and watch these, but don't watch the 1st episode first, because something happens in the 1st episode completely unrelated to the rest of the series, but it's the sort of thing that might turn you off from watching the rest of the series.
It involves a pig.
I'm not going to say any more. I'm not going to spoil it for you at all. You will eventually get to it after you watch a few of the others, but get hooked on the other episodes first and then go back to season 1, episode 1 and watch that. Again, because they're unconnected, doesn't matter what order you watch them in. The other thing that's coming back to TV is True Detective, which made a great big splash in its 1st year with Matthew McConaughey and who was his co-star the 1st season? Like, I'm blanking on his name. I can't think of it. And then they came back for the 2nd season.
Which had Vince Vaughn.
Right, and was terrible. The 1st season, everybody paid attention. It created an enormous amount of buzz. The 2nd season with Vince Vaughn, not so much. But HBO has...
Colin Farrell?
I think Colin Farrell was in there.
Okay.
Yeah. HBO has not given up on True Detective, even though it's not going to be on this year. They have signed Mahershala Ali, who just won an Oscar for his role in Moonlight. He is going to play an Arkansas State police detective named Wayne Hayes. And according to a trade magazine called Deadline, the 3rd season of True Detective, quote, will tell the story of a macabre crime in the heart of the Ozarks and a mystery that deepens over decades and plays out in 3 separate time periods, unquote.
He was also fantastic in Hidden Figures.
Yes, he was. He was very good in that.
Woody Harrelson
was in the 1st season with Matthew McConaughey. That's good, yes. And Colin Farrell was in the 2nd one. So True Detective is coming back, and I think it's interesting. Hollywood has now discovered the Ozarks.
Were you right?
We have that Netflix series with Jason Bateman and Laura Linney, and now True Detective will be there, probably coming back sometime next year. And that's all the time we have for showbiz stuff this hour. Next hour, of course, it's the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads of the News. Keep it here on the Big 550 KTRS.